Welcome to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week. The 27th Congressional District may be the last one listed numerically in Florida, but it has become one of the most competitive races for an open seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. After 3 decades in office, Republican Ileana Ross-Layton is not running for re-election. The two major political party candidates have not held elected office before, Democrat Donna Shalala and Republican Maria Elvira Salazar. Salazar is a former news host on Spanish-language television. Shalala was the president of the University of Miami. She also served as the Health and Human Services Secretary under President Clinton. While there are 401,000 registered voters in the 27th Congressional District, the outcome of the race could have implications for the makeup of the Florida delegation in Congress and even the political control of the U.S. House of Representatives. It's a district that leans Democratic, but has sent a Republican to Capitol Hill for 30 years. Hillary Clinton won the district by almost 20 percentage points. President Trump was not popular in this district 2 years ago, and the Republican in this congressional race, Maria Elvira Salazar, is careful about aligning with him.
I would think that the route we Republicans need to take is to say that we need to pay attention to what Trump does, not so much to what he says.
It was Trump that was the motivating factor for Democrat Donna Shalala to get into the race.
I turned on the television in February, and I just got pissed off with what was happening in Washington. I'm usually a very rational person, but I got angry.
We spoke separately with the two major political party candidates competing for this open seat in Congress. It's a purple district where a third of the registered voters are Democrats, a third are Republicans, and a third have no declared political party affiliation. This is Donna Shalala.
The district has always been split between Democrats and Republicans and independents. Everybody says it's trending Democratic. It's trending Miami.
Do you feel that it's trending Democratic as the Democratic candidate?
I feel that the people of Miami are smart, and they'll make their own decision about the kind of representation they want.
We are the ultimate melting pot.
That's Republican Maria Elvira Salazar.
We are not just like any other city in the United States. And you need to know what are the needs of this community in order to be able to represent them.
Today we feature separate conversations with the two candidates running to represent Florida's 27th Congressional District, talking transportation and international trade. But first, we start with health care and Republican Maria Elvira Salazar.
We want to have better coverage for less money. That's the bottom line. And I think competition is the mother of good quality.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. Thanks again for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson. Today, we're featuring separate interviews with the two major political party candidates in the race to replace Republican Congresswoman Ileana Ross-Layton. She's retiring after 29 years on Capitol Hill. The 27th Congressional District stretches from Cutler Bay and Kendall through Coral Gables and Little Havana, includes most of downtown Miami, and then out to South Beach and up to North Beach. In 2017, this congressional district had more people enrolled in the Affordable Care Act than any other congressional district in the nation. About 90,000 people got their health care because of the Affordable Care Act. The Kaiser Family Foundation found that 8 out of the top 9 congressional districts with the most Obamacare enrollees last year were in South Florida. So health care reforms and whatever the future of the Affordable Care Act may be will have significant economic consequences here. We spoke separately with Republican Maria Elvira Salazar and Democrat Donna Shalala about health care. We'll begin with Salazar.
Do you support continuing the Affordable Care Act?
I believe that we should better it. We need to get what's good in Obamacare, like the pre-existing conditions, that's a must, needs to stay there. And the 26, I like the fact that I can keep my kids up until they're 26. They are only 18. So I like those two. But the problem is, and I'm sure you're aware of this, Tom, is that the premiums for everybody, half of the people that did not need Obamacare and that they had their own private insurance with their own employees, or employers, I should say, the premium has gone up 20%. This year is going to go up 20%. Deductibles have gone from $300 to $1,200.
So this year, according to the Florida Office of Insurance Regulation, which approves premium changes, the average premium for a Florida-approved Affordable Care Act is up 5.2%.
Right. But that's this year.
Correct.
But nationwide, it could be 20. But it doesn't matter whether it's 5 or 2. or I mean 5 or 20, your employers are not paying you 5% more, right, of your salary. And Obamacare was supposed to bring the coverage and the prices that we paid for health insurance down, and it didn't happen. So let's find a solution.
I think ACA supporters would say it was supposed to bend the cost curve, not decrease the cost curve, but accelerate the cost increases.
Well, that's what they're saying now. And reality is that we want to have better coverage for less money. That's the bottom line. And I think competition is the mother of good quality. So what do we need to do?
Right.
Let the forces of capitalism, free market forces, get into the health care business. The health insurance companies are making too much money. Why? We need to bring some competition. Right now, in the exchanges in Dade County or in any other county in the country, you may have one or two providers. No.
It's true in the rural counties. It's not true in the big urban counties like Dade County, which is where the 27th district is.
Well,
there's multiple providers for the Affordable Care.
There's two providers, last time I checked, in Miami-Dade County, and some of them are thinking about leaving.
According to the Florida Office of Insurance Regulation in August, in Miami-Dade County, there were 4 health insurance companies offering health care coverage plans through healthcare.gov, the website for the Affordable Care Act. That's the same number as the year before. Back to our conversation with Maria Elvira Salazar.
Let's suppose you have 3. If you only have 3 restaurants, I assure you that the French fries are not going to be really good.
So what would you do then to encourage competition for health insurance companies to come and take the risk of the health of the constituents in the 27th district?
Well, I would allow them to compete across state lines. I would allow for you to be able, if you wanted to buy an insurance company in Nebraska or in Ohio, and if you don't want any coverage for pregnancy, or if you don't want any mental health or dental health, that is your choice.
So you do you support in the ACA continuing with the existing conditions.
Absolutely.
Allowing coverage for children to continue on their parents' coverage to the age of 26, but doing away with the 10 basic coverage aspects, one of those which includes pregnancy.
I want to give choices to people. That's what I think. And your choice, and you decide what type of insurance you need according to your needs. I will go to Congress and I will fight for what I'm just telling you. Let the market, the forces of the free market economy, get into the health insurance. That it hasn't happened in the pharmaceuticals or in the health insurance. I have a lot of constituents that need some type of good health care. It doesn't matter how you call it, Obamacare or Tomcare. It doesn't matter. It's just give me good coverage for not that much money. And listen, healthcare catastrophic diseases is the number one causes in this country of bankruptcy.
Right. Right.
So how could that be in the land of the free?
So with that in mind, those 96,000 people who are enrollees in the Affordable Care Act, what is your message to them that you would carry to Congress if elected?
Well, one of the messages is that we need to see now the numbers after the mandate has been subtracted.
The individual mandate is no more.
The individual is not. So we need to see in reality how many people enrolled without wanting to.
Right.
I know a couple of that said, you know, I don't need this, I don't care, I don't want to. That's part of being free. I understand that it's not good for the system, but it's good for
them. So you supported getting rid of the individual mandate?
I like freedom. I like freedom for you to pick whatever you need to pick according to your needs.
Well, the individual mandate was that you had to pick something. But what you're saying is you would prefer to allow people not to pick any coverage at all.
And if that's what they want to do, then they will have to pay the consequences at the end.
The consequences being
of not being covered,
right? And those consequences wind up in Dade County at publicly funded
at Jackson Memorial,
right? Which absorbs a lot of public spending.
And if that person chooses not to have an insurance, health insurance, and it winds up at Jackson, then they will have to pay for those bills.
And if they have no ability to pay,
then it was not their choice. At the beginning either, because also when you...
But you see that cycle though, right?
Oh, I get it perfectly.
Yeah. So what's the, I guess, to Jackson Memorial, which just a decade ago was in financial straits because of unpaid bills.
I understand.
Yeah.
And that's probably most of those people were people in need that were poor and needy, and they could have not been able to buy any type of insurance, including Obamacare.
Hmm.
Because, you know, Obamacare is not cheap either.
Well, Obamacare...
And some people cannot even afford the premium. Sometimes
more than 95% of Floridians that have signed up for Obamacare qualify for the tax subsidies that reduces their monthly premium to, in some cases, just a few dollars.
Yeah, but you said it's subsidies.
Sure.
And what about if the government cannot afford or the treasury is not full of tax dollars that can pay for that subsidy? I don't want subsidies. I want free market. Lower those costs.
Let me read a statement that your opponent in this race, Donna Shalala, has on her website. She writes, low-wage jobs, wage stagnation, and high health care costs have forced many people to work harder than ever, not to get ahead, but just to survive. Would you agree with that?
Oh, I agree. The cure for that statement is to have a good economy, and that is what we're having right now. 4.1% growth. We heard, and I'm sure you heard about it, that 2 years ago, the economists, the pundits would say that it was impossible for the economy of this country to grow more than 2 or 3%. We're in 4 and going up. So what does that tell
you? I don't know if
we're
going up. We'll have to wait and see if we're going up. And we have had other quarters, quarter over quarter, of higher growth or similar growth in the Obama administration. So to cherry pick one quarter of growth, we want to look at the overall trend.
Yeah, but I understand.
Yeah.
But Obama was not able to, in the first year and a half of his presidency, get to 4.1. And even though they said it, the pundits, not only the Democrat pundits, but the Republican experts, economic experts, said that it was not likely that we were going to arrive at 4.1%. And we are. The deregulation has worked. Hispanics, they're working more than ever. Our unemployment is very low. That didn't happen years before. Forget about Obama. Previous administrations, the African Americans, they're working more than ever. Women are working more than ever. The regulation has worked. The banks are lending more to people that want to start up the little business. So that's what I like. You know, that's the beauty of this country. Let the forces of capitalism and free market, and then that person that my opponent is talking about may have a chance of being able to get a job.
Republican Maria Elvira Salazar running for Congress in Florida's 27th congressional district. Now, jobs data by congressional district really isn't that up to date. Census Bureau figures from last year put the unemployment rate in the 27th district at 4.6%. In August, the countywide jobless rate in all of Miami-Dade County was 4.1%. Nationally, the unemployment rate for blacks hit a record low in May. It was at a record low for Hispanics in July. Still to come, Salazar's opponent, Democrat Donna Shalala, a longtime healthcare policymaker, on what she thinks works and won't work for health insurance.
A lot of people think, why don't we just let capitalism take over of healthcare? The problem with that is that it's an industry that needs some regulation.
This is the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. Thanks again for listening and supporting public radio. I'm Tom Hudson. Today we're talking about politics in the Sunshine Economy with Florida's 27th congressional district race. Donna Shalala has run government health care plans, regional hospitals, and has sat on the board of a major health insurance provider. She was Secretary of Health and Human Services in 1993 when President Clinton tried to reform health insurance. She has led universities with big hospitals, the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and then, of course, the University of Miami. And she served on the board of directors at the healthcare insurance company United Healthcare for 7 years. In our conversation with her about healthcare, we started by asking what she wanted to tell the tens of thousands of people in the district she wants to represent in Congress who get healthcare coverage through the Affordable Care Act about the efforts to change or repeal the law.
I'm going to fight like mad for the Affordable Care Act so that they can keep their good health insurance. But I also want to do everything I can to lower their costs at the same time.
Because not just bend the cost curve, but actually
bring down
year's cost less than this year's cost.
And the only way to do that is take a hard look at pharmaceutical costs, at what we're paying for what we get. And frankly, to talk about the mandate, because the whole purpose of insurance is for us to spread out the risk. And if all of us aren't in, then the risk becomes much higher and we all end up paying a little more. And frankly, those that don't have insurance walk into the Jackson Emergency Room or the UMH or Baptist, and those costs come to those of us that have insurance.
If you win in November, it's a hypothetical, I know, but if you win and if Democrats win enough and take control of the House, would you introduce a bill to bring back the individual mandate?
I would. But I want to be fair, because people that have dropped health insurance are, it's often for the affordability issue. I believe that if we had had a chance to make corrections in the Affordable Care Act, the way you usually do when you have a big program, we probably could have brought down the costs. Young people don't see the purpose of having health insurance.
The invincibles.
Yeah, invincibles. But, you know, when we let their parents' insurance cover them to 26, everybody took it up.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, for those of us that ran big companies, it didn't cost us anything because they were young and healthy.
You sat on the board of directors for a health insurance company, so
I did.
You have that perspective. What do you draw from those years as a member of the board of United Healthcare that you would put into legislation?
That they have great trouble with uncertainty, so they're going to hedge their bets and raise costs. They need a settled market with clear rules, and they need to be held accountable. A lot of people think, well, why don't we just let capitalism take over of healthcare? The problem with that is that it's an industry that needs some regulation. More than anything else, we have to hold them accountable.
How so?
We have to hold them accountable for quality, mm-hmm. for outcomes, and for access. The early days of the Accountable Care Act, everybody was scampering to find a doctor that would take Obamacare.
Yeah.
And so it took the government putting enormous pressure on the insurance companies who had supported Obamacare to make sure that we had access. But I'm as concerned about quality. And people have story after story, and I listen to them too, as well, about their drugs being turned down. I think the insurance companies have gotten a little better. They're more consumer-oriented, but it's the unsettled nature of the market that causes them problems. But we have to keep our hand on their back and demand accountability and quality performance.
What's your assessment of where the cost structure has the most leverage? And I'm asking this as somebody who used to lead a hospital group as the president of the University of Miami, somebody who sat on the board of directors of an insurance company, a payer. As you looked at the hospital costs and the insurance costs, where are the dollars to be found in order for consumers to save?
Fragmentation. The system is too fragmented. You get moved from your primary care physician to a specialist, and no one's coordinating that care. We're just beginning to do more coordination. And so there are costs there. There are savings there. There's no question. We have too much money in specialty care and not enough in primary care, not enough in worrying about keeping people healthy. If you really look at what extended life in this country, clean air, clean water, building codes, it wasn't just high-tech medicine. And I have enormous respect for the specialists.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that putting more money into primary care, integrating nurse practitioners into our practice plans, putting them in leadership roles, that's number one. The second thing I would do is we've got to negotiate better pharmaceutical prices. I have two simple solutions to it. Let Medicare, which represents 44 million people, negotiate.
The Part D Medicare,
the
right
Part
now.
The Part D Medicare.
Right, which does not negotiate prices
it
on
does
behalf
not.
Of its members.
It does not. The individual insurance companies that or private freestanding groups do it. Or just take the VA price list, which has already been negotiated with the pharmaceuticals. Take that VA price list and simply adopt it for Medicare.
Would you put that into legislation? Is that the anvil in which this needs to be pushed against?
We need real leverage. And the only leverage you have is when you have 44 million people that you're buying pharmaceuticals for. And that's your real leverage in negotiations. Why do you think other countries in the world have lower prices than we do? It's because they negotiate as a nation. We can't do that. We have a private health insurance that we want to respect, but simultaneously, we have a big public health insurance program, and we can negotiate on behalf of them. We do it now for Medicaid.
Right. Does the private health insurance market have a future in your estimation?
I do think at least for a long period of time. in part because unions have negotiated good benefits with large corporations on behalf of the people they represent. So we have to be careful about this. Everybody thinks that's a right-wing thing. It's not at all. In fact, we kept the private market as the unions built up and negotiated good benefits, and because companies want to compete for good workers. So they want to keep their own control of their private insurance, and they want to keep control of their costs if they can. And governments also provide good insurance because they want to compete for good workers. So from that point of view, and besides, it's cheaper to keep that private system for those that want to keep it. And for everybody else, we have to provide options, including access, being able to buy into the Medicare program. Long ago, I recommended... Before you're 65. Long ago, I recommended that we be able to buy into Medicare at 55, particularly those with pre-existing conditions. And frankly, there aren't that many people. Medicare, you wouldn't even... It'd be a blip because of the 44 million people, but you would take some high-cost people out of the private insurance market, and it would help small businesses. It certainly would help people that have pre-existing conditions and need a good, strong health insurance program.
Do you support private health insurance across state lines?
You know, I think it's a silly idea.
Why?
And let me tell you why. So a person from Miami gets on an airplane. They fly to Georgia. They buy one of those cheapy plans. They come back and they try to use it at Lyon, with a group of doctors here, and then they have trouble using it, and the health, the insurance commissioner of Georgia isn't interested in taking care of them. There are five states that now have allow you to do that. There's not one insurance plan that's ever been written. It's too complicated to try to find a group of doctors on the other side of the border, and the insurance commissioners in the home state do not want to try to administer something in another state. So it's an idea that's been out there for a long time. It's never been implemented because it's too complicated to implement. And frankly, it's one of those marginal ideas. We ought to take on the system directly.
Let me ask you to respond to a quote made by your opponent on her website, Maria Alvaro Salazar. She wrote, quote, "Our local economy is driven by our small businesses who employ the majority of our residents. We must help these small businesses grow by allowing them to invest and create more high-paying jobs."
Of course. Of course. Everyone believes that. That's not a Republican or a Democratic idea. Of course, everyone believes that.
I suppose it's how to accomplish that.
How to accomplish that. But more importantly, those workers need health insurance as well. And the Affordable Care Act provided some opportunities, which is the other way, the other reason why we have to protect the Affordable Care Act. But we have a high-tech industry. We've got that's beginning to get off the ground. At the University of Miami, we built a research park with lots of incubation space. So my father was a small businessman. I know the challenges. And he eventually went bankrupt because the chains came in. He ran a small grocery store. So I know about small businesses. There are a set of things you can do for small businesses aren't necessarily direct subsidies, but are taking some things off their backs, making it easier for them to expand.
Sounds like reducing regulations is what
that sounds
like.
Some of it may be reducing regulations, but it's not a Democratic or a Republican issue. It's about jobs. It's about the economy. It's about real people that get up every morning and go to work.
Speaking with Donna Shalala, the Democratic candidate in Florida's 27th Congressional District, an open race this election season. Still to come, more with Shalala and the Republican candidate in the race, Maria Elvira Salazar, tackling transportation in South Florida from a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives.
I would love to see more of the rapid buses, but I think that we should go little by little and offer the citizenship different options that are pretty, that are good, that are fast.
Do the things first that we can do quickly that will relieve the congestion.
Such as?
The bus lanes are important.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy today, talking politics with Florida's 27th congressional district race. I'm Tom Hudson. Mail-in ballots will be sent out in a week. Early voting begins in 3 weeks. Election day only a month and 1 week away. Today, we're featuring separate interviews with the two major political party candidates running in one of the most competitive races for an open seat in the United States Congress. Longtime Republican Ileana Ross-Layton is not running for re-election in the 27th congressional seat. Two people who have never held public office are running to replace her, Republican Maria Elvira Salazar and Democrat Donna Shalala. Salazar is best known as the Spanish-language television news host, Shalala probably best known for her years as president of the University of Miami. The southwest border of the district they hope to represent runs along the South Dade Transitway, a road parallel to US 1 dedicated for public buses. It is the first route of the county's transit smart plan that has been approved for bus rapid transit, not an extension of the overhead Metrorail system. Funding for the project still must be approved. The district also includes portions of the Palmetto and Dolphin Expressways, the southern tail of I-95, and the MacArthur Causeway to Miami Beach, some of the most congested roadways in South Florida. On transportation, we'll start our conversation with Republican Maria Elvira Salazar.
How will you address the transportation challenges in South Florida if representing South Florida in Washington?
We have to sort of get together, all of us. All these authorities that have the I-95 and the A-36 and the A-26. Let's all get together in one table and have a template and something like a common goal or a common plan and then take it to Washington. That hasn't happened.
Why do you think that hasn't happened in the past?
We're very special people.
Meaning?
In South Florida. Well, because I think some of the elected officials have not been able to agree with each other. But that's the end, and I'm saying it in very simple terms. Look at Orlando.
Is it the federal legislature that needs to play that role? Is it a federal leader that needs to play that role?
I don't know. Whomever needs to play the role, but somebody has to come and say, and I'm more than willing, is not to point fingers at anybody. Is just to say we need to get our act together so we can go to Washington and ask for the big federal dollars that will come back here and be used in what we promised. Used in the proper fashion to fix the transit problem, whether it's the rapid buses, whether it's rail on rail, whatever you want to call it. We need to find a solution to the transportation, but it starts at home.
You're aware of the transportation challenges. So even speaking as either a citizen or as Congresswoman from the district, what's your priority on transportation?
I would love to see more of the rapid buses. I think the rapid buses. Remember that we have this culture of getting into our cars. We're not New York City, where people do not think about having a car. That's not part of their DNA. It's part of our DNA, just like Los Angeles, that they have similar problems. But I think that we should go little by little and offer the citizenship different options that are pretty, that are good, that are fast, and then start changing that mentality.
You are aware of the debate over bus rapid transit versus rail expansion, certainly in the South Dade busway, part of which falls into the 27th district.
Yes.
Many community members in South Dade County said, you know, we were promised Metrorail expansion in 2002.
And it was too expensive.
Just recently, the Transportation Planning Organization approved a bus rapid transit plan.
Yeah, didn't have the money. So let's be realistic. That's why I'm saying don't let it happen again. So if what we can afford right now is to have the rapid buses, so be it. If they are pretty, and for what I've saw, the design was pretty attractive, and people start using it because it's easier to do, it's easier just to catch the bus than to drive down south, then we start changing the culture. It's a two-way street, changing our minds and offering the citizenship or the people something better than their car.
Mario Diaz-Balart is the chairman of the subcommittee
of
appropriations for transportation. That district abuts the 27th district. And he has said oftentimes that he needs to hear the community speak with one voice.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I'm saying. So that's
Congressman Diaz-Balart is a veteran congressman. He has risen to a position of leadership. If elected into this role, you would be a freshman congressperson. I guess, what would you be doing differently than what Congressman Diaz-Balart has been
trying to do? I will be joining forces with him and with Curbelo and with...
Have they not joined forces earlier with Ross-Layton and others?
Well, maybe I will be a force of change, and I'm sure that I could be. But I assure you that I will be a force helping Mario, because Mario is in that committee, in order to not only bring the money that we need from federal dollars, but sitting down with the local elected officials to see if we can put together that plan that he was talking about. Mm-hmm. It's just
is a smart plan in your estimation, in Dade County, the six transit corridors?
We need to study it more, but I like what we started with, the rapid buses. It's not that expensive, and we have the land, we have the tracks, yeah. We just need to put the little bus and have people get on it. Let's start with that and prove to the constituents that this could be a reasonable plan to continue and to expand in other areas.
You write on your website that you promise a first-rate public transportation system. The way you write it on the website is why not South Florida? South Florida deserves a first-rate transportation system.
Orlando has it. Why can't we have it?
And you essentially promise that, to say, if elected, that's what you will work toward. How?
And what I just told you, I will talk to Carlos and I will talk to Mario and I will ask him in which way it can now be three or four or five, and sit with the local officials and see if we can help them understand that this is what we need as federal elected officials to take to Washington. Otherwise, it will be impossible.
Federal money helped build the Metro Rail system under President Reagan back in the 80s. It was the most significant piece of the funding structure for the Metro Rail system. Do you anticipate going forward the federal government playing the majority financier position in the future for transit projects as it has in the past for public transit projects?
We need to prove to the federal government that the next project is going to work. Unfortunately, it looks very pretty, but the usership is very low.
Why? For Metro Rail.
For Metro Rail. It was nice, it was pretty, and it was very expensive. Did it do any good? Apparently, people chose not to use it. I mean, we have freedom. We cannot force people. I mean, thank God that we have the freedom to pick your car or to catch the bus. I think we need to do it in a more intelligent way, which is what I think that it's happening right now. Let's go with a cheaper proposition, which are the rapid buses.
Speaking with Republican congressional candidate Maria Elvira Salazar. Now, her Democratic opponent Donna Shalala also supports using bus rapid transit instead of rail in South Dade County. Here's Shalala on transportation in the region.
You know, we have a smart plan. It's very expensive to implement.
You support the plan?
I do. But I think as parts of it are re-debated, we ought to have an open mind. But let me say this. We need infrastructure money in this community, not just for transportation, but we need it for those seawalls. We need it for the Everglades. I would have skipped the tax cut, taken the $1.9 trillion, divided it among 51 states, and funded the SMART plan.
Including Puerto Rico in that count.
Yes, exactly. Right, okay. Funded the Everglades project, given the federal role there, and funded our transportation plan. We have a lot of problems in our community. We ought to get some of our significant amount of our tax money back.
How do you work at that function? When you talk to local officials, and you used to be in those rooms a lot, certainly, as they probably still are, they will talk about the lack of federal funds to help support these kinds of projects.
You know, that's what we have to do. We have to bring back the federal funds. And by the way, they're not federal funds. They're our tax money. They're our tax money. I keep saying to all my friends and neighbors, hey, it's our money. And our money went for a tax cut.
But the transportation challenges go back well before the tax reform debate in the last 18 months.
I tell you the truth, the first thing I would do is just synchronize the lights.
Well, Miami-Dade County Mayor Carlos Jimenez says they're doing that. They're doing that.
They are. Because they don't have the resources to do it fast. I'm a big believer in taking the low-hanging fruit as quickly as you can. So if we can bring back some infrastructure money, don't build a border wall. Build a seawall. Give us the money so that people that can't afford to pay for a seawall in front of their house, so that we can spread the risk and really help people to do what we need to do in our communities.
The SMART plan is the Miami-Dade County public transportation plan with the corridors that have been talked about for a couple of decades, frankly. And some of those corridors were designed or thought to be originally rail. The South Busway through the 27th District, for instance, recently was approved for a bus rapid transit. Do you have a favored mode of transit for those corridors that have been identified as heavily trafficked?
I think that what I would want to do is to do the things first that we can do quickly that will relieve the congestion.
Such as?
The bus lane is obviously, the bus lanes are important. But look at what I did at the University of Miami. I actually have worked on this issue over and over again because we had too many cars. I told the freshmen they couldn't bring cars. I eliminated 2,000 cars from traveling to Coral Gables. And then we spent millions of dollars subsidizing our employees and our students to take public transportation. Guess what the tax bill did? It has announced that those subsidies, those discounted cards, people now have to pay taxes on them. In other words, working people are paying taxes to subsidize the tax cuts for wealthy people. It's outrageous. Someone didn't read the bill. The one thing I can assure you is I read bills.
Would you recommend to municipal leaders in the 27th district that they think about banning some drivers or a class of cars or go for a toll system in some of the downtown urban areas?
You know, here's one of the things we know in transportation. Economic incentives work. They really do work. But we also have to find a way to get people to work. You know what? We've got to find a way to build affordable housing. People are moving further and further out. I've talked to a number of people about what our strategy would be to identify subsidies for affordable housing. You can't talk about transportation without talking about affordable housing. That's what Congress people have to think about. Mostly, we've got to think about respecting the strategies that have been put in place by elected officials with public hearings and bringing the resources home.
That was Democratic congressional candidate Donna Shalala. Now, still to come as our separate conversations continue, Shalala and her Republican opponent Maria Elvira Salazar on global trade and the risks higher tariffs pose for the business of trade here in South Florida.
I do not believe that a tariff war is in the interest of American business, and American business doesn't either.
I think that the Trump administration, what he's doing is that they're playing a hard hand on the table, and it will be resolved.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy today. It's politics in the Sunshine Economy with Florida's 27th Congressional District. I'm Tom Hudson. There are only 623 registered voters in precinct number 983 in downtown Miami. But the area represents tens of thousands of jobs, over $1 billion in taxes, and billions of dollars of income for local and regional workers. It is the voting precinct that includes Port Miami, and the precinct falls inside the 27th Congressional District in Florida. It's a rare open race this election year, with Democrat Donna Shalala and Republican Maria Elvira Salazar running against each other. Like any big congressional race, President Trump and his administration's policies play a role that includes the president slapping tariffs on products from China. China is the largest trading partner through Port Miami, and exports shipped out to China from Port Miami fell by almost 29% in September, according to the international trade data firm World City. We spoke about trade and the threat tariffs pose for South Florida's trading business with Shalala and Salazar. We'll start with the Republican, Maria Elvira Salazar.
Do you support the president's trade tariff strategy?
I would only support it with China. For a limited period of time until we can negotiate a better trade deal with China. The Chinese had a product and a project, I should say, called Made in China 2025. The Chinese have been stealing outright our inventions, our intellectual property, and that needs to stop because we are mortgaging our kids' future.
Port Miami, its largest trading partner is China.
Yes.
By value. 16% of the cargo that goes through Port Miami is related to China. $2.5 billion year to date. Arguably, some of that is at risk as the Trump administration increases tariffs on those Chinese products.
I think that the Trump administration, what he's doing is that they're playing a hard hand on the table, and it will be resolved. I understand what you're telling me, but I also look at the national security topic, the national security issue before any other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we as journalists, we should really, well, you are now.
I still am. You're still, no longer.
That's right. That's correct. You still are. We should explain to the American public the danger China represents for our future, period. That's national security. And I see it the same way President Trump sees it. I do not see it with Canada or with Mexico or any of our allies, democracy.
So you do not support the tariffs that are happening with Canadian steel, Japanese products, or even the European Union?
I believe in sitting down like he's doing with Mexico and Canada and rearranging or restructuring the free trade agreements mm-hmm. that we have. I think that's legitimate. I think we need to protect our industries. We need to protect our workers. Sit down at the table and renegotiate. With China is a different world, and it's a different situation because Chinese have proven over and over again that they do not want to negotiate that much. We needed to get to the point where we are right now for them to at least budge a little bit. They were imposing a 25% tariff on our cars while we were allowing their cars to get into our market for 2.5. No good.
There have been massive public investments in Port Miami. Some of those dollars
yes.
have been federal dollars that have come in to deepen the port, to prepare and to be able to handle these big post-Panamax cargo ships that are now able to go through the Panama Canal and try to attract that traffic to Port Miami as opposed to losing that traffic to Savannah and points north here, which has been usually the case. So there considerably could be a lot of business at stake with these Chinese
tariffs. It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
The Chinese will budge. They need our market.
What?
So the Port of Miami and everything you've said, which I think it's beautiful because that expands not only our trade, but it brings jobs, good jobs for the people that live here.
What gives you confidence that China is going to budge? They haven't yet.
But they will, because they need us more than we need them, and they know it. Otherwise, Xi Jinping would have not sent a delegation 2 weeks ago running to Washington. They really needed to sit down with our trade representatives to figure out what's happening.
This is
the
Chinese, of China.
That's right, yeah. Xi Jinping, the president yeah. of China. The Chinese are communists. Nothing good comes from communism. And we know it because, you know, I'm the daughter of a political refugee in Cuba. So I believe that their intentions are not the best. And I believe that we need to treat them the way we're treating them in order for them to behave accordingly in our trade business.
While China is the largest single trading partner for Port Miami, it is Latin American trade that really has made Miami into a logistics and trade hub. Brazil, Colombia, and Chile are a third of the trade at Miami International Airport. Brazil, Colombia, and Chile are significant trade partners at Port Miami as well. The message to those countries is what when the President of the United States is putting trade tariffs on even larger trade partners nationally?
The message to them is that we are defending our national security. And I go back to what I'm saying. I am sure that this is going to be short term. Look at Mexico. We are negotiating with López Obrador that no one ever thought.
So the new Mexican president.
The new Mexican
incoming,
president,
yeah.
That's right. The incoming Mexican president, December 1st, he will be the president of Mexico. We are negotiating a beautiful NAFTA deal. So I'm not saying that I'm in favor I'm in favor of free trade, but I'm in favor of fair free trade.
That was Republican congressional candidate Maria Elvira Salazar. Now, her opponent, Democrat Donna Shalala, opposes the Trump tariffs and tells us she does not think it's part of a presidential strategy on trade.
It certainly is going to hurt Miami in the long run, the port, the airport. But more importantly, you know, we have industries in Hialeah, auto parts industries.
Not in the district, but
not in
the
district,
region here.
But look, if you represent District 27, you worry about your whole community, no matter whether they're in your district or not in your district. Housing is going to be more expensive. Steel, aluminum. These negotiations with China are scary, and the Chinese have just cut them off. I do not believe that a tariff war is in the interest of American business, and American business doesn't either. If you look at the most conservative institutions in American business, the Chamber of Commerce, They don't think trade wars are a good idea either, and I don't think it's a strategy.
Do you think the Chinese trade policy that had been policy in the United States was harmful to American companies, American jobs, or American know-how, intellectual property and whatnot?
I think there are serious problems with China on intellectual property. The question is, did you have to get into a whole trade war to deal with that issue in particular? And most people believe you didn't have to. Are there some things that are wrong with our trade relations? You bet. But the question is whether you had to go to war about this. Because in the process, you're hurting Miami companies. You're making it more expensive to buy a television or a microwave. You're also making it more expensive to buy a house. And boy, affordable housing is a huge problem. You stick tariffs on steel and aluminum and on all the finishes that take place inside a house, and you're really going to run up housing prices.
As it relates to the trade business in South Florida, while China is a significant trading partner in Port Miami, in fact, the largest trading partner by value, it's South America, of course, that's an enormous engine, both as a importer, but also a destination for the exports that flow through our customs district here, Brazil, Colombia, and Chile especially. If elected, how would you work toward Latin American trade?
You know, I would hope that the Democrats would do what the Republicans and what the president haven't done, and that is to understand the action is in Latin America, that there are trading partners. I'm deeply concerned that this administration has not paid attention to these very important relationships. And Democrats have, by tradition, been very interested and done some things with all of those countries. But more importantly, we have to pay attention. One of the reasons we have to pay attention is because of what's happening in Venezuela, in Nicaragua, in Cuba. It's not just the countries that we have direct trading relationships, but the horrible things that are happening to the people in all of those places. And those of us who will represent South Florida obviously have an interest, but I would argue the whole country has an interest.
That was Donna Shalala, the Democrat running in Florida's 27th congressional district against Republican Maria Elvira Salazar. The winner will succeed Republican Ileana Ross Layton, the longest-serving member of Florida's congressional delegation. She is not running for re-election. You can always follow us on Twitter at WLRN. Look for a podcast of this program and all of our Sunshine Economies by searching Sunshine Economy on iTunes. Pilar Uribe is our technical director. Polly Landis is our booking producer. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening.